Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that couple shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growling, presented by Visa Network, working for everyone. Paul Eater Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here working for you. Jay, how are we doing?
Doing great. You know, it was a little weird working on draft strategy series pieces and looking out the window and seeing snowfall this week, but it does. It looks like that's out of the way. It looks like we're one step closer to the draft. We're inside of 10 days now.
We are. The Bengals local workout day was this morning. It was recorded this on Tuesday. Which was kind of a rite of passage for draft season, where a bunch of guys from local schools, local connections, some Ohio State guys come down and do workouts. Coaches watch. It's not a big deal that some people would think. Anybody that's like Alec Pierce was there from UC, some other guys that with draftable grades, they weren't working. They're just hanging out. It's usually kind of a visit, kind of a way for them to do a visit with some of those guys more than anything. And some of the guys that don't have draftable grades are there trying to make impressions. But anyway, got a chance to chat with with coordinators, with Zach Taylor and other people. So that was kind of what's going on. That it means we're that much closer. We're going to be talking to officially on the record with Duke Tobin later this week. And we're thinking we'll probably get our pre-draft say nothing with him, and then our pre-draft say nothing with Zach Taylor next week. All that in lead up to the draft, which is almost here. Can't get here soon enough. Very excited. And we have something else I'm very, very, very excited about. You know we love our live events. You know we love 50 West. And so we're back with our live event at 50 West. It's going to be on Tuesday after the draft, which is Tuesday, May 3rd, and it'll be at 7 o'clock, and it will be myself, it will be Jay, and it will be Bengals Director of College Scouting, Mike Potts, our good friend of the program, Mike Potts, who we speak to after the draft every single year, and anybody that's been listening to the podcast for a long time knows how great Mike is and how informative he is, and he is the tip of the spear with their college side of the scouting game, and just a good dude all around. And so it's going to be exciting to have him down at 50 West. We'll be breaking down all things Bengals draft. So we hope to see you down there. We have to tap back into I don't know how many growlers bet winners we had last season, but I know there were some. We paid off the growler bets down there last year. So the growler bet winners, we'll have to maybe send an invite for them to come out as well to collect their winnings. But very excited to have the event May 3rd, Tuesday after the draft, 7 o'clock. Bengals Director of College Scouting Mike Potts will join. It's going to be a great time.
We do have receipts, so don't show up claiming to be a growler bet winner. That's true. We just don't have them at the ready right now. But I do have my spreadsheet, and I'm curious. You know, we call Saturday night when the draft is over the best beer of the year. I imagine Mike Potts views it the same way. I can't imagine all the work that those guys do. And when we think we do a lot to get ready for the draft, I can't imagine. There's a year-long process. I can't imagine what – it's almost probably like Dane Brugler when he completes the beast, just that huge exhale, and then take a couple minutes and then get started on the next one.
Yeah, I mean, and then priority free agents are going off, and you're trying to sign those guys. It's kind of a never ending, and so we have it on Tuesday because, you know, there's a chance they're still trying to wrap up some other odds and ends on Monday. So we wanted to make sure that Mike would definitely be in the clear. So maybe his best beer of the year will be with us, which is probably not the best beer of the year, but I like to think that that would be the case. You mentioned Dane Brugler. I'm glad you did. Dane is on our show. We always anxiously await talking to Dane every year, and so we have Dane, author of The Beast and All Things Draft, here at The Athletic. Great to have him on. We're going to get to him quickly. Also, because we're dubbing this the Call is Coming from Inside the House episode, also with The Athletic, our new draft guy, Deontay Lee, is here. Very excited to have him. He's joined our team just this month. He does fantastic work previously with PFF, done stuff at Cleveland.com, all over the place. And he's a fantastic addition to the draft team, as you will find out. We'll have him later on. You mentioned our draft strategy series going off now on The Athletic. Just go there, click on any of them, follow us on Twitter. We have those links up there now. It is a couple down. We'll be going through the rest of the week as it comes up, but we're going to talk about that here today. A reminder, we have the $1 per month deal going on now. So if you go to any, you just want to read the draft strategy pieces or The Beast or any of this stuff that we've been talking about, you can go and subscribe for just a dollar a month deal, still ongoing right now. So we got the draft strategy series. We want to kind of dive into that a little bit more. Maybe you read it. There's a lot in there. So a lot of it is down and written, but if you, we want to go a little bit further into it. We're going to kind of share some of our thoughts on what we found in the reporting of it and the analysis that we did to kind of shed light really on the Bengals draft approach heading into next weekend. So we're gonna do that in a minute. Let's start, though, because when you're talking about getting a real sense of the Bengals draft approach and really understanding things, you start with Dane Brugler. So let's start with my interview here with Dane, and then we're gonna come back and talk a little bit of defense. So here is our draft star, Dane Brugler. What's up, Dane?
Hey, Paul. Excited for the draft? We're, what, 2 weeks away?
It's almost here. I'm sure you are excited to have the draft happen and, you know, take a few weeks before you move on to the 2023 prospects. I'm sure you're already thinking about digging into that, though.
Well, you can't help but pick up some tidbits here and there, you know, when you're talking to players and, oh, you know, Ohio State's got this guy next year. You know, what'd you think of him and things like that? So yeah, no, it's a year round thing. That's you never turn it off. So hopefully after the draft, get a little bit of rest, spend some family time. But yeah, it's definitely a year round process.
Yeah, well, Dane, it's awesome. The Beast is incredible. For people that don't have it or have not seen it, cannot recommend it more. To cover any question you could possibly have about any individual who will not even get drafted in this draft but will end up on a roster, it's there in depth. It's incredible. 7-round mock draft that you had is now up too. Also, you are going to be live in Vegas with Robert Mays and Nate Tice on draft night for people that want to hop on to the Athletic and NFL show, because that's going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah, the first two nights we'll be going live with every pick. So, first 105 picks, I believe, on Thursday night, Friday night. So that's going to be a lot of fun for sure, to break down the picks as they happen. What does that mean? What, you know, what surprises are we going to see? I'm really looking forward to that. So, yeah, people, a lot of feedback on the draft guide. The Beast has been awesome, and then the 7-round mock dropped today, and so that's been a lot of fun to hear people. Of course, everyone's been thrilled with it. All 32 fan bases have absolutely loved every pick. So I wouldn't expect anything other than that.
Look, I'm thrilled. You know, Clark Harris may not be happy with the long snapper pick in the 7th round, yeah, but yeah. I love the depth. I love looking for every little angle. Do you ever give up on finding out how many siblings somebody has had or when the first year was that they started football? Like, you're close, you know, you get almost everybody in the section. There's like one guy and you don't know if he was the 3rd or 4th born and you just give up on it.
I spend way too much energy being frustrated about not finding out some of that stuff. Like I need to remind myself, like, it's okay if you don't know, you know, how many siblings this 7th round defensive tackle has. It's okay. Like, I need to remind myself of that sometimes. But you know, I just I create this draft guide as something that I would want to read, you know, at my heart, I'm a big draft fan. I love scouting. I love evaluation. And I want to create something that I would want to read. And I did. So I would just try to make it the best that there is. That's out there in terms of comprehensive information. So maybe I'm probably a little too hard on myself, but you know what? I think that's what kind of sets the bar high with this draft guide.
I totally agree. And there's a reason that I bring that up besides just giving you a hard time. And that is one thing that from a Bengals perspective that they felt like their team and their culture was built on was finding guys who love ball, who love practice, who love the process, who have the makeup. And a thought being that's been circulated is that it's harder to find those guys these days as the landscape of football changes, of college football changes. As someone who goes through that and looks for that and tries to find that in every player, do you find that it is easier or harder to find those guys than it was before? And how? What are the things that you kind of most look for when you're digging into that to find that type of stuff that teams covet so much?
I think it's become easier for me over the years just because as my, you know, network grows, you know, I'm able to talk to college coaches and, you know, I've got that relationship now where they're not going to feed me info. That's bad because then they know that, you know, that destroys that relationship. So they will be honest with me and they know that I'm not going to go out there and just repeat it. But maybe I will in a certain way. Write in the report that, hey, you know what, you know, scouts are, you know, there or the college, his college career, there were some issues or something like that. So, you know, it is definitely tough because, you know, you've got a lot of guys that are good at football that enjoy playing, but when you get to the NFL, it's a different animal. It's a business. It's something that takes up all of your time. And when you have money in your pocket, and all these different options open to you, and that's why we a lot of times first round picks, second round picks, they bust. And sometimes the reasoning is they're just not ready for pro life in terms of all the responsibilities that come your way on the field, off the field. So it can be tough at times, no doubt. But I think there are certain triggers that tell you, okay, yeah, this guy does love ball. Whether it's, you know, playing through injury, whether, you know, that competitive toughness, watching tape in, you know, late in the game, the fourth quarter, and the guy is showing the same amount of energy the last play of the game as he did the first play of the game when it's, you know, 21 point lead. So I do think that there are certain things you could pick up on pretty quickly with a guy and that you know, okay, yeah, this guy, it's not forced. It's not something that is untrue. I mean, he genuinely loves playing football and I think that translates to the next level. So it can be tough at times, but I do think there are some indicators.
Well, keep that in mind, love ball prospects, as I quiz you a little bit on some Bengals targets throughout this draft, as certainly something that they're going to have high atop their list of competitive type dudes that feel like fit the culture. I'll start here. You mock draft, you had Tyler Linderbaum at 31. He's been probably one of the most popular mocks of the Bengals because the fit is so obvious. I mean, yeah. would thrive in the zone, wide zone scheme. He would play center. You could move Karras over to guard. So many things about it make sense. The one concern you hear is the size and ability to where do you fall on that as far as is there a real concern about him not being maybe necessarily the prototypical size that you'll be looking for and being able to hold up in that respect?
And I think, and it's not even so much the 6'2", 295, it's the under 32 inch arms. Mm-hmm. That's what really concerns me. And I think it's fair. I mean, it's just physics. When you're a center with under 32 inch arms and you're facing a guy that's a defensive tackle that's got 35 inch arms, you're at a disadvantage. And that defensive tackle is going to be able to get his hands on you and give you a little bit of push. And so, I think as a run blocker, we're going, you know, that's really where Tyler Linderbaum thrives. I think he could be an elite level run blocker in the NFL. Holding up in pass pro, that's going to be a different story and something that's where a little bit of doubt creeps into your mind. But if you talk about a guy that loves ball, this guy, the mentality that he plays with, I mean, you talk to any of the coaches at Iowa, they just rave about him. He was a team captain last year, innately motivated, plays through pain. I mean, he started at every game the last 3 years, 35 straight starts. So I think there's a lot to like with him technically, athletically, competitively. It's just some of the measurables are just not quite there. But I think with Tyler Linderbaum, there's more than enough to compensate, and you're willing to take that chance.
How big is the gap, the difference between him and you get to a Juergens or the guys that are the next second and third level down? Are there many of those? I mean, where you're like, okay, we loved the idea maybe of adding a center, but how big is the gap that you're more willing to pass on that for other premium positions?
I think that's the other thing that hurts Linderbaum is the fact that this is a sneaky, strong draft at center. Cam Juergens is the second round version of Tyler Linderbaum. When you talk about movement skills, you talk about size, except Juergens is a little bit bigger. He's over 300 pounds. He's got his arms are 2 inches longer. That matters. That's a big deal. So Cam Juergens, maybe not as proven on the field, but he shows a lot of the same traits. And so he is that second round version of Tyler Linderbaum. And then in the third round, Dylan Parham from Memphis, Cole Strange from Chattanooga, Luke Fortner, Kentucky, maybe Zach Tom from Wake Forest. Some teams like him as a potential top 100 pick. So it's a really good center class if you're looking for players who can come in and compete for jobs early, and especially for guys that give you a little bit of position flexibility, where a guy like Tyler Linderbaum is a center only. Luke Fortner, he started more games at guard than he did at center at Kentucky. Cole Strange, he was primarily a guard in college, but he looked outstanding at center at the Senior Bowl. Dylan Parham, same type of thing. He was primarily a guard, but teams look at him as a center. So it's a really a deep group of centers in that top 100 first three rounds, and that could end up hurting Tyler Linderbaum as teams look at their options and say, we'll wait on this position and go after a position maybe we feel is not as strong second, third round.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
We know kind of the group of corners that the Bengals will be targeting and number one priority for them. We know we're talking about Booth, Elam, Kyler Gordon are kind of in that potentially in that 31 range, or if they were to try to trade back a few spots, whatever that would look like. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in beyond that as you've dug into the guys in the second and third round. There's a particular group that kind of perks my interest. Small school mid-round guys at corner, outside corner in particular, showed up here. Tariq Woolen, Joshua Williams, Zion McCollum, of all those, what did you see in kind of looking at them, and how big do you think the transition is for them going from small school to big school and being able to, which one of those types of guys could maybe be the quickest to pick up the NFL level?
Yeah, I think what really helped those three guys is the ability to play at the Senior Bowl. All three played in Mobile, and they performed well. They did not look like they were out of their element going up against better competition, and that's huge. That's a big first step for them. I do think with somebody like Tariq Woolen, for example, it's not just that he played at UTSA, you know, which is a Group of Five school. It's not necessarily FCS or Division II. But he made that transition from wide receiver to corner really in the midst of a pandemic. So, you know, he is still learning the position, still growing. And it's funny, you know, a lot of schools will embellish a little bit with the size. And so you'll see a corner that's listed at 6'3", and then he's, you know, 6 foot and change. Tariq Woolen is a verified over 6'4", 205 pounds, ran a 4.26. At the combine, just a remarkable traits athlete. And we know cornerback position, it is a stopwatch position. Probably more than any other position, you're looking at the traits and saying, okay, we'll bet on that. For a guy like Tariq Woolen, who is still raw in a lot of areas of playing the position, oh, but he's 6'4", 206, almost 34-inch arms with 4.2 speed. Yeah, sign us up. We'll take that gamble in the second or third round. And then the other guys you mentioned, Joshua Williams from Fayetteville State, another big guy, 6'3", 195. Doesn't have the same type of speed, but I tell you what, he did a nice job during one-on-ones at the Senior Bowl. He's really physical. The technique needs to catch up a little bit, but he finds ways to stay connected. He's got good footwork. He's got size. Those are the foundational traits you're looking for in a corner. And then you mentioned Zion McCollum, who all he did was test maybe just about the best out of any of these defensive backs at the combine. 6'2", 200 pounds, running a low 4.3s. The jumps were amazing. Under 6'5", in a three cone, just remarkable. 5-year starter at the FCS level, helped lead Sam Houston State to the 2021, the spring national title. 54 passes defended over his career. There's a lot to like about Zion McCollum. Oh, by the way, his twin brother's also in this draft, tested pretty well also at the pro day. So there's a lot to like about the traits. And yes, there's going to be a learning curve. But like I said, more often than any other position, you're willing to bet on those raw traits at corner than some of these other positions.
Zion McCollum, relative athletic score, perfect 10 from MathBomb, which was one of those that sparks you up. And one of my favorite nuggets in your entire beast is that him and his twin brother, the reason they kind of ended up at Sam Houston State because they wanted to go to the same school together where both of them could get in, and that's kind of how you end up at a small school like that. That's the depth you get. Yeah, that's the depth you get.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about in terms of knowing where these guys are headed. You need to know where they're from. And okay, well, why'd this guy end up at Sam Houston State? Oh, he had an offer, or he's committed to Utah at one point. But his twin brother. I mean, yeah, that helps connect the dots and put those puzzle pieces together.
Okay, three techniques. It seems like not a great draft for them. Now the Bengals are looking at number 31. They wouldn't have been been able to get any of the elite ones anywhere. If there were, Devontae Wyatt is the top. You have him at 27 in the mock draft. You know, I see these every once in a while. He goes from being in the teens to showing up in the 20s. I'll ask you what I asked Mike Renner of PFF last week. Is there any chance in hell that Devontae Wyatt does somehow slip all the way down to 31?
I think the chances are low, but there's at least a chance. I think he's going to be he's already 24 years old. There are a lot of teams that are not going to draft a 24-year-old player in the first round. Doesn't matter what position you play, maybe except for quarterback. So that's something that could affect where he goes. But at a certain point, it's just like, okay, the talent outweighs what ideally we want in terms of some of these factors. And so I will not say it's impossible for Devontae Wyatt. And if not for Jordan Davis, his Georgia teammate, and the remarkable combine he had, we'd be talking more about Devontae Wyatt and how much of a freak he is. 6'3", 305, he ran a 4.77, remarkable time in the 40-yard dash. And, you know, we talk about it with Trevon Walker, his teammate at Georgia, who's going to be a top three pick, how he really wasn't able to blossom and they didn't let him loose as an athlete. Kind of the same thing with Devontae Wyatt. You see the motor, you see his effort, but you also see an ability to win with quickness, win with power. You see pass rush moves, but a lot of times he wasn't able to show that very often. So I do think Devontae Wyatt, there's going to be a lot of landmines in front of the Bengals from, you know, the Cardinals, the Bucks. A lot of teams are going to look at three technique and see a guy that's going to make their defensive line better with Wyatt. So probably not going to make it there to 31, but there's at least a chance.
It just seems like I'd never even thought about it until then. Occasionally, he just shows up a little further back and a little further back, and it kind of every year it seems like there's somebody that makes you wonder how it happened. And a team like the Bengals would be thrilled if that was a reason that it did. It probably won't, like you said, mid round three techniques. Does anybody stand out, or is it just kind of slim in that area?
Yeah, you know what? It really is. I think that obviously when we're talking about third, fourth, fifth round, there's a reason these guys are talked about in that range. But, you know, I think if they wait until the second or third round, say they wait on day two, like a DeMarvin Leal from Texas A&M has a little bit of that. We talk so much about versatility, inside outside versatility for defensive linemen. I'm not sure if DeMarvin Leal has that versatility or if he's just a tweener, you know, and there's a difference. I think he might be stuck between, is he an end? Is he a three technique? So Leal, there's plenty of question marks there. Matthew Butler from Tennessee, 6'4", 300 pounds. I think he might be a fit when you talk about the fourth round. Kalia Davis from UCF. I think we'd be talking a lot more about him if not for he had an ACL injury back in October. And that really, you know, knocked him out for his senior year. He would have been at the Senior Bowl. He would have had an invite. But, you know, he did not have a chance to be there because of that injury. Wasn't able to work out for teams. But if the doctors give you two thumbs up and say, you know, his knee is progressing nicely, we feel like long-term, no real damage, nothing that you have to really worry about. He should be able to get on the field at some point during training camp. Davis is a guy, I think, at fourth, fifth round, that could be a sneaky good pick for a team looking for more juice at the three technique.
Speaking of juice, I'll give you one last kind of mid to late round target here. Wide receiver, punt return juice. It's kind of where the Bengals are looking for that combo. Somebody who can come in and be receiver four behind their big three and then be able to be a real help on special teams in return. Where do you look at names on that?
Yeah, and I think if you know they want to go in the third round, they could find a guy like a Calvin Austin out of Memphis, Wandale Robinson out of Kentucky. If they wait till day three, one of my favorite day three receivers this year is Danny Gray from SMU. And I think if there's a Darnell Mooney in this class, a day three pick to the Bears, ended up being a starter, it could be Danny Gray, 6 foot, 190, legit 4.3 speed. He can win deep. And what I loved about his tape is he wins at all three levels. He can win underneath, be a yak threat, win in an intermediate game, and then he can also get behind the defense and track the football. You wish he was a better finisher. Way too many drops on his film that just are frustrating. But that's why we're talking about a fourth-round pick here and not someone in the top 100. So I think Danny Gray would be one of those guys that can help you out on special teams as a return man. But then be a fourth receiver with the potential to be more down the road.
I appreciate all your time and taking us deep into some of these Bengals targets and what they'll be looking at as the year. The only one more, really one left here that on my mind, and that's tight end. And let me ask you about Charlie Kohler from Iowa State. I mean, we talked about process, love ball, leadership types. You have a lot of those in the beast about him. I mean, they're looking for somebody who can bring them a little bit more long-term receiving tight end type juice. He seems like he might be a guy that could fit that, check a lot of boxes of a really quality receiving tight end in the future that brings all those intangible traits.
Yeah, he comes from a very athletic and also academic family. His parents are at professors at Oklahoma. He's a guy that he won the academic Heisman this past year as a senior, but he is also really productive on the football field. He was an All-American each of the last 3 years, set the Iowa State single season records for catches by a tight end, team captain. So a lot of those things fit. I do think sometimes he'll overthink things. He's so smart that he's so analytical, his process, that he will overthink things at times instead of just playing loose and playing on instinct. And that's something that will creep up at times. He tested really well for a guy that's 250 pounds running a 4.62 in the 40-yard dash, or the jumps were really good, 7 flat in the 3 cone. I don't think you necessarily see him separate all that much on film. So you want to see those testing numbers show up more on the field. That's what I'm talking about with in terms of overthinking things, where he can just get a little bit better. I think as a rookie, he's a guy that's going to help you right away in the red zone. Love his ball skills. Love his ability to make catches through contact in traffic. I think he can do that right away. And then I do think long term, he has some upside as a guy that is going to push for starting reps. So Charlie Kohler, I think right now I've got him late third, early fourth, could sneak into that top 100, but could be in the mix for the Bengals if they want to go tight end there.
Love it. Everybody, make sure you check out The Beast if you haven't. Check out the 7-round mock draft if you haven't. And certainly on draft weekend, you're going to want to check out Dane, Nate Tice, Robert Mays live in Vegas, staying out of trouble, staying in front of the mic. So that's where you know it's all on the up and up there. So Dane, thanks again for your time, not just with me, but all the work that you put in this to making all of us be able to enjoy the draft more. So appreciate it. Have a good one, man.
Would you tell me before we hit record 20 on, was it red or I can't remember.
I just said, just look, it's 23 is the number. 23,
okay, gotcha, 23 gotcha,
is
gotcha.
My number. So yeah, keep an eye on that.
No, I appreciate it, man. I always enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, thanks, Dane. All right, great as always to chat with Dane, who is just a machine, an absolute machine of content. I kept testing him, all these specifics, and of course, knocked it out of the park every time.
You know, it's not a comedy piece, but I find myself chuckling every time I read through The Beast. Just the stuff he digs up on these guys' backgrounds. There's so much that goes into it, and he pulls some of these nuggets out, and I just kind of chuckle and shake my head like, man, that I can only imagine how many hours goes into putting that thing together every year. And your conversation with them, I loved it. How it just, you just get right into it with Linderbaum, and Dane gets to the 32-inch arms part of it. And that is going to be a huge question. If he's there for the Bengals at 31 with those short arms, and it, like Dane said, it's just physics. You know, if you got 32-inch arms or less than 32 and you're going against a D tackle with 35, it's going to be hard to win.
Yeah, let's kind of, you know, because here's the thing. We're going to talk about defense here right now. But it's impossible to talk about the Bengals draft defensively and not talk about, well, what would it take? What would it take to get off of defense here in the top of this draft? It just, look, we have seen this happen where they go offense in the draft the last few years, and they went defense in free agency, and it flipped this year. It flipped. They went offense in free agency, and you have – I mean, it's remarkable, you know, when you look at, Jay, the draft strategy for defensive line and then versus the one for secondary, the difference in how many people are signed up for the long term, where in the defensive back room, there are two humans – signed up to play secondary for the Bengals beyond next year. That's it. It's Mike Hilton and Chidobe Awuzie. Everything else is unsigned, unknown, including an open spot right there as potentially a starting corner and at the very least your first man off the bench, and you hope to be a number one down the line. That is a whole lot of uncertainty. And they have not drafted a single defensive back outside of Jordan Brown in the 7th round in 2019 since Zach Taylor got here. Not a one. Okay? And you go all the way back to William Jackson in the 1st round in 2016, Jesse Bates in 2018. And in the top of your draft, first 4 rounds, that's it since William Jackson for secondary players. I mean, it's just, it's not something that they've gotten so far away from. We've had this old adage of, oh, the Bengals are taking those corners every other year, right? They're loving their investment in that secondary. They had 5 first-round corners. That's an old adage. The new thing is they have not done this. And that's why, to me, it's so right in front of you when you see those two next to each other. The defensive line, which has a damn near the whole – team is signed up beyond next year, versus that secondary is just so badly in need of an influx. It just feels like this is where this is. It's going to be really hard to find an offensive player to get them off their mark here on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, maybe first and second round. Absolutely. It goes defense. I mean, and you mentioned how the drought with not taking defensive backs. They have not taken a player in the top 50 who plays defense since William Jackson in 2016. Jesse Bates was 54. He was the next closest. They've had 8 top 50 picks since then, and they've all been offense.
Wow.
That's them and the Rams are the only ones that have not had a defensive player in that time span. And the Rams, oh, by the way, had one total top 50 pick since 2017. So
that's remarkable. I mean, that's really amazing.
It really is.
And it speaks to why you feel so good about the direction of their offense and the growth that they're having. They're all growing together. And I love that idea. I think they have done that perfectly in letting those guys all grow up around Burrow. The other point I want to make when we talk about, you know, what would it take to get them off of these defensive guys that are going to be available, it's that this quote from Duke Tobin from the combine, which I trotted back out, I thought was a great way to start this, and that is he said this when talking about picking late. The question didn't know it was going to go there, but I thought he went somewhere that's important for this conversation. He said, I think picking late opens up the universe of possibilities for you as opposed to picking very early. You get a premium talent, but picking late, you might have a broader spectrum of guys to choose from and maybe a little easier to fill an exact need with a guy that is comparable to other guys at that level. I don't mind picking late at all. I love it, actually, which is him kind of joking about, yeah, let me be picking late every year. Mm-hmm. But I think the point there is, you know, it's like the pyramid system, right? You know, the further you go down the pyramid, the more options you have across your tiers that are in the same tier. So you're going to pick your need in that tier. And that's what we're going to have at 31. And their needs are so clearly on defense and where they're going to go that, you know, it just seems really unlikely that they would go off of that, especially when you mentioned Linderbaum. I mean, what? We're talking about a guy who he's not a perfect prospect. We're talking about a guy who is a pass protector because of short arms and being undersized. You're wondering, is he kind of a liability in some respects? You know? And that's a concern when you're talking about then doing that instead of taking Andrew Booth or Kyir Elam or Logan Hall or whoever you have at 31 on the defensive side of the ball that really hits you nicely. Now, those guys have their issues too, but your just needs are so much heavier on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and it opens them up, not only the wider universe of players, but it sets up too for one of their favorite moves, which is the double up, because you can take multiple stabs. If you've got the one guy you're more sure of, you know, say it's a corner, and you kind of touched on in the defensive back series where you've got him taking Booth in the first round and then going and getting another one, Taylor from Tennessee in the fourth, you can do that and kind of throw multiple darts at a spot, because nothing is certain, but when you're picking up in the top 10, you have a pretty good idea of who that guy is and where he fits, and he's going to be there for a long time. And it's not a crapshoot at the end of the first round, but there are more variables there, and it does make sense to go more for need. And this team, that's where the need is. It's getting a backup defensive tackle, and it's getting a corner that it can either push Eli Apple or beat him out. The needs on offense just aren't – I mean, yes, they need some depth at wide receiver, but this is a super deep wide receiver class. You can afford to wait. And the signing of Hayden Hurst kind of pushes – kind of kicks the tight end can down the road a little bit more. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see them go defense in this draft.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV.
Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Let's run past or boot this, Jay. Run past or boot first offensive player taken. Rounds 1 and 2. I'll put them both out there. So first, second round, third round, day 3. Run past or boot.
Well, I'm going to boot 1 or 2. Even though it's a possibility, I don't see it happening. The big question is, I think I would run with 3 because I do think there is a good likelihood they trade back in the first or the second round, which gets them an extra third round pick. So maybe they still go defense, but they get an offensive guy with the final pick of the third round.
I feel like trade back is probably going to end up with a 4. I mean, you did the piece last week, analyzing trade backs. It feels like the going rate for as far as they'd be willing to go, unless they made a massive drop, would probably be early day 3, a 4th round pick, right?
Yeah. Unless they traded out of the first round and went, I don't know how comfortable they would be going 10 or 12 spots, but I think you could get a third doing that. But still, I think the odds are there that I said that, they could go defense, but it's rare. So I think I will run with third. I'll pass on fourth or later and I'll boot first or second, which seems crazy. It's not what this team has done in the past, but it's where they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is really hard because you do throw in the trade factor and, you could see a pick swap happen back there, where, okay, now you have an extra third because you gave up a 6th or 5th or something like that as part of a swap to get up higher. The thing is, though, the draft has a nice depth. I mean, you get in that 4th and 5th round with the total prospects. You see a lot of really nice players back there. So that's why I think they would also, you would love to get that. It's just a matter of adding those extra picks. If they add the extra pick, if you trade back out of day 1 and add an extra pick in the 4th round, I think you're more likely then to see them go defense and then use the 4th round as a chance to get the receiver or the tight end or a guard. You know what I mean? Whatever that is. To me, I'm gonna run with the third. I'm with you. I'm gonna pass on day 3 and boot for a second. I'm gonna do the same. I hesitate to because it's still wide open and they still could add an offensive lineman. And what do we hear? Talking to Brian Callahan today. Look, Deontay Smith. They're kind of focusing on him at the tackle position right now. And, Jackson Carman, we'll see. And that, to me, the tackle position is really interesting because there could be some really good ones available there. And if a Zion Johnson or a Kenyon Green are sitting there, I don't see it being Linderbaum. But if one of those two guards are sitting there and you really feel like you can solidify things and not be taking as much of a chance with Jackson Carman or let him compete, that's enticing, right? I mean, there is an enticement there, but I just think when you talk about guys like Booth, guys like Elam, guys like Hall, some of the other guys that are in play there, potentially, and a lot of the other, there's plenty of good defensive players that think that look like they'll be there in that spot. I just think that weighs more. The other thing that's interesting when we dial back, I think there's a really intriguing group, and I think they're very intrigued by the next wave of corners. you know, I mentioned in the sleepers, the track section, Cam Taylor Britt, from Nebraska. They had in for a visit. We talked about him. I can't remember where we talked about him. If somebody was on this podcast or somewhere else, or so many places we talk, I forget, but he's got all this competitive ball loving process, loving, you know, stuff that the Bengals love so much. He's got some traits. I mean, his tape's not clean. He's a little bit more of a projection. But if there's anybody that would know the personality of a player from Nebraska, it's Zach Taylor, with every connection you could ever imagine back there. A perk of being in the Nebraska Hall of Fame. But, you know, you talk about somebody who, if they're sold on the character and then brought him in, and he's sitting there in the second round, certainly makes a ton of sense. To me, it's some combination of corner and defensive tackle with those first two picks is the most likely scenario, because there's guys we can go down this list. I mean, we talk about Cam Taylor Britt. I'll bring up, you know, let's talk about Logan Hall a little bit, who I've mentioned a couple of times, who's come on the radar a little bit more lately. You wrote about him in the defensive tackle piece. I mean, his versatility, it's hard not to. I tweeted out the relative athletic score combo between him and Calais Campbell. Tall, long, athletic, maybe a tweener, but in the Bengals defense where they stress versatility, he can move outside, he can move inside, he can certainly be your inside three technique in passing situations, which is so valuable. He can play as a rotational guy with BJ Hill. You can move him outside if you need to a little bit, but really playing inside over the tackle, over the guard, in that spot, you could absolutely see him thriving there. He's so big and long, and productive, and he's got all of these hardest working dude, reshaped his entire body during the process there. I mean, stuff that you just know stands out to the Bengals. You can just hear him talking about it now. That makes a ton of sense. A guy like that is something that they would place a big bet on, absolutely, even at 31.
I mean, they've heard it from within their own building how disruptive the pass rush up the middle is. That's the one thing that really gets to Joe Burrow. And so a guy like Logan Hall, that even if he doesn't get home, you mentioned it, that length, he can really kind of shrink the passing windows and bat down some passes. We saw Carlos Dunlap being so great at that off the edge with the long arms. It's really intriguing, because I think it was Dane that just mentioned it, that the there's a difference between versatility and being a tweener. And I do think he's not a guy without a position. He's a guy that can legitimately play either position. And I don't know. I don't know if 31 is a reach for him. Dane's got him 37 overall. Maybe that's where they have a couple corners sitting there that they like at 31, and Logan Hall's still there, and that's where they say, we're willing to trade back five spots, get an extra pick, and bank on the fact that one of those three guys is still going to be there. And kind of going back to what we mentioned earlier, the defense approach, I just did a quick scan. You know the last time the Bengals went three straight defensive players in a draft?
Oof. I don't.
1998. They actually went four straight. Went to Keo Spikes, Brian Simmons, linebackers, Artrell Hawkins, cornerback, and Steve Foley, linebacker.
Man. Guys that played a lot of snaps in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. A whole lot.
Participate in a lot of wins. Simmons did, because he stuck around for the Renaissance. But it has been a long time. I mean, there is – so – but they're due in that nature. Another aspect of this is the next wave, and I touch on this in a couple of spots, but particularly our good friend from last week's episode, Kent Lee Platy, the relative athletic score. You have these small school guys with these crazy traits are a part of this next wave. And it's a really interesting thing, because there's multiple of them. Zion McCollum from Sam Houston State, perfect 10, relative athletic scores, rare as it gets. And he's just a freak athlete, but he played at Sam Houston State. We heard Dane talk about him a little bit. I want to talk about him a little bit more. I find him incredibly intriguing. I mean, look, if you want guys that are, like you said, it's a stopwatch position. If you want guys that can come in and develop and learn to play the game here on this level, and you know they are freak athletes. I mean, I got the list here of the people that have tested well in recent years between 15 and 20. Byron Jones from UConn, he was picked 27 overall. He was a perfect 10. This was in 2015. He has 103 starts in a Pro Bowl. Made a boatload of coin in the league. Marshawn Lattimore had a 9.99 in 2017. He was 11th overall. He's been one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Fabian Moreau from UCLA. He started every game for Atlanta in 2021. His career's been spotty, but he's obviously found a good role. CJ Henderson was the 9th overall pick. He had a mess of dealing. He's one of the cast-offs in Jacksonville, but not because he can't necessarily physically play the game. He certainly can, 9th overall. Eric Rowe, he's moved to safety from Miami, has 50 career starts. I mean, the skill set plays, man. Like, it doesn't matter. And he also has, oh, by the way, like 13 picks and 54 passes defensed in the truly brutal quarterback play of the Sam Houston State FBS. But that said, you got a guy like him. You've got a guy like Tariq Woolen. You've got a guy like, who am I skipping here? I'm leaving somebody off. Damari Mathis. Anyway, from Fayetteville State, you've got these small school guys with these great athletic profiles that if you don't take a corner in the first round, I think that's a direction that you could certainly see it go as well.
Yeah. I mean, I went with Woolen in the second round in the mock draft I did. You're right that the Bengals have a history of liking those small school guys and going off of traits. And it's another situation where they don't have a ton of need. So if you're going to roll the dice on a guy like that, you can always back him up with a fourth, a fifth, a sixth, something like that. And just take multiple stabs at it. I don't know if the second round is too early for Woolen, but it's going to be interesting to see which way they go. You know they're going to have in the defensive draft series points this out is there's going to be that second tier of corners, a handful of them that they can take at 31, and if they do go D tackle there or go some other direction, you're still going to have quality picks to hit at the end of the second round, and that's where those small school guys really could fit. You jump on them earlier than somebody else might be willing to take a stab on them, and you know you've got a new cornerbacks coach, you've got a defense with a lot of leaders to help bring that guy along. You could absolutely see them taking someone who, in other people's eyes, looks like a project, and what the Bengals, with the work they've done, they can see them contributing a lot sooner.
A guy like Perrion Winfrey would be there in the second round too. And that's important, you know, because you've got players. I mean, there's players at every position that are going to be there, you know, for you. But I do think that there's a good depth there where you feel like you can check both those boxes off. And if you do that, God, you just feel like you did what you needed to do, and the rest of it is just a matter of seeing what falls to you and what feels right. But to me, that's the direction that you want to go first. Let's cross over to the offense when we come back. But first, let's bring in Deonte Lee, who is fantastic. One of our newest members of our team, with a great look at a bunch of different aspects of this draft from a Bengals perspective. So here is our newest NFL draft writer, Deonte Lee. All right, very excited to bring on our next guest and hear that podcast ground, and that is our latest free agent acquisition. Went out, hit the market, brought in another big free agent to bring the juice. His name's Deontay Lee. If you don't know him, you should. He's covering X and O's and draft and everything else for us here at The Athletic. So what's up, Deontay?
I'm good, man. I wish I could have put out my Players Tribune piece about how I'm joining the best team of sports writing, but I'm really, really glad to be here. You know, I've been saying this to a lot of the people that have been kind of introducing themselves to me, that a lot of the people that are here are people that I've admired, people whose work I've been following for years on end. You know, I've been a consumer of The Athletic for I don't even know how long, basically since inception. So it's just great to be here and be part of this place with all these people here that I respect. And obviously things are starting to change around here a little bit. And as they scale up, I'm just glad that there's enough space in the pocketbooks to bring me along.
That's right. You know, it's just a matter of get your guarantees all in order, exactly, and everything like that. Make exactly sure everything's
nice
straight and let's
sign
go to work.
Bonuses, all that. Yeah, got it,
sure,
all squared
absolutely
away.
It's a shame they don't have like the signing office, you know, where you right can go in there with like the big
yes
board behind you, uh-huh, and have your moment in the sun.
Right.
But we'll call that what this is then for
exactly
us.
Exactly.
At least for the Cincinnati folks. You were with PFF.
Mm-hmm.
You've done stuff for Cleveland.com. Mm-hmm. Now you're kind of full time here with us on the draft team. Just kind of give me a little introduction to your background and how you kind of got into the game.
So the way that I've kind of described it is that I feel like I have touched football from every potential angle that there is. So I played in high school and college, left college and started a family. And while I had some downtime, you know, I figured, you know, writing was something I was passionate about, and football is obviously a passion of mine. So why not marry the two? And I did that, kind of ran my own independent blog for about a year or so. I'm guessing that something I did, I written something about Ohio State the year that they went to the playoffs, and I'm guessing that crossed the desk of Doug Lamorese, which I'm sure your Ohio folks will know, and he brought me on the podcast, kind of help, you know, get me situated where I could freelance and do some work for the Buckeyes, and I'm sure through that I crossed the desk of some people at PFF, was working there in a freelance capacity for a little bit before I was full-time, and now I'm here, man. I was telling you right before we jumped on, I feel like, you know, I've just been trying to keep my feet planted to the ground because this thing has been moving so quickly, and now I'm here covering the draft, which gives me an opportunity to cover the pro game, the college game, and everything in between, so I'm very fortunate to be here now.
Yeah, we don't do easing in around here. We just shove you right into April.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Hit the ground sprinting.
Let's not mess around with any, like, you know, take a month to really kind of find your bearings. No, it's April, man.
Exactly.
Like, let's
so
go.
If anybody's seen those videos of, you know, when the treadmill is running at like 22 miles per hour and you just got to jump on and just hit it sprinting, that's basically where I'm at right now. So I'm just trying to keep my head on straight.
I love it. Let's dive a little bit into this draft from a Bengals perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the first pieces you wrote was some of the top edges in
right
this draft. And obviously the Bengals won't be up for that group.
Mm-hmm.
But guys that would be around in the first and second round, I mean, what has been your impression of those? You know, they're set. Hendrickson, obviously. Osai, they drafted last year. They really
yes
like what he can be. Hubbard on the other side. But I think, you know, you can't have enough dudes that are just going to bring it from almost strictly a pass rush perspective,
mm-hmm,
off the edge. Who do you see maybe in those middle rounds that really stands out to you that could be kind of a pass rush specialist that could be like a Joseph Osai part two for them
right
to try to bring in?
So I would say if there was a guy to pick, and I think that not just Cincinnati, but Cincinnati for the sake of this conversation is one of those contending teams that kind of has the benefit of not needing anything immediate in production at that position right now. So when I think about it, I kind of think about a guy like David Ojabo, right, who's obviously nursing an Achilles injury, and his timeline is probably going to be a little extended, trying to make sure that his body is right by the time that he's 100% ready to go. But if I were a team like Cincinnati, and let's say you are able to address, you know, whether it's interior offensive line or another defensive playmaker early in the draft, and you feel like you've got a third or fourth round pick to play with, and he's available, I certainly wouldn't protest something like that, because you can bring him in and say, hey, you've got a full 12-month runway, because it's not like we need you right now to produce for us. Take care of your body, take care of your Achilles, make sure it's stable and you're not at risk of re-injuring or injuring anything else in terms of soft tissue because you're overcompensating for it. I could definitely see him being a nice candidate for a lot of these teams on the back end of the first round who are going to be picking in those late 20s, you know, to the 30s, you know, in the draft order as you get into like those mid-round types of areas.
Are there other finishers? You know, I mean, the Bengals plan on being up by about 6 points most games and having needed the defense just to finish it off. We saw that a ton last year. Are there any other finishers that you see that can just be the dudes you just send out there to hunt in the NASCAR package or whatever anybody's calling it these days?
Drake Jackson is another guy that I have a big affinity for. Part of that is me being a USC homer for certain. but I think if you're talking about a guy who, again, has that potential to be straight rip off the edge, he can bend at the hips, you know, really finish at the quarterback. He's a guy that I think has the potential to do so. And I would probably make the argument that for as intriguing as he is as a prospect, he's probably underdeveloped. And that's obviously me being a USC fan and kind of looking at him pretty closely. You know, you can kind of see some of the ways in which he's maybe just knocking on the door of his potential. His weight has fluctuated a whole bunch throughout his college career. They've asked him to do different things from being a hand down interior defensive lineman to being a stand up kind of nine technique type. So getting to the NFL where he's going to have some clarity in his role and you can really lean into what he does best, which is ripping up the field, you know, bending at the hips and being able to finish on the quarterback. That's another guy who's in that kind of day two area that might be really intriguing for a team that's contending and is just trying to add surplus value.
Love it. It's funny, those two things we saw, the, you know, Lou Anarumo, the Bengals coordinator, loved using versatility in his scheme. He's got those guys up, he's got them down, depending on where he's trying to go. But certainly when he's looking for finishers, that makes a ton of sense. I want to ask you about kind of something you did with the Seattle draft, and I think is interesting to look here, is that the cornerbacks, the Bengals are in that market hard.
Yes.
At 31. You know, we know the big three, none of them are going to make their way down there. So we're talking about Booth, we're talking about Elam, we're talking about Kyler Gordon. You could go to the second round, a guy like Cam Taylor-Britt, who Dane Brugler mocked to them there. Take me through your view of the differences between those and kind of keeping in mind, you know, the different schemes that Anarumo likes to do. He's in and out of man, in the zone. He likes to be able to do a little bit of everything. Can you dissect those guys a little bit for me?
So I won't do them all in ranking. I'll let you know who my favorite is of that next group, and it's Kyer Elam. I feel like, you know, I've been pounding the table for this guy basically since the beginning of the draft, and it's not like I'm the only guy who's in on him, because prior to the college football season, people were talking about him as being a first-round type of talent, maybe contending for being one of the top, you know, top-tier corners along with, you know, Sauce Gardner and Derek Stingley. And I think that, you know, just as the season passed along and Florida kind of being the train wreck that it was throughout the season, that he's kind of rubbed some of the sheen off of him. But when I look at a corner and you talk about the prototype, right, you want a guy who's 6 foot, got the arm length, plays physically, has the speed to be able to run on the outside, and then can do things with some versatility in terms of playing your cover threes, playing your quarters, playing man, just like you were mentioning with Lou Anarumo. Like, I think that his best quality as a defensive coordinator is his flexibility and his willingness to do anything or whatever it takes on the defensive end to be able to stop offenses. So when I think about versatility in that way, I think that Kyer Elam is the kind of player that you can bring in and say, hey, at any point, if we ever need to just lock in, put our best guy on their best guy, play tight coverage, that's the type of player that can do that. He has the potential to do so. Besides that, Kyler Gordon is a guy who's pretty versatile, could play inside and out. I think he would fit that cornerbacks room really well. Again, looking at what they did last year, there was a whole lot of shifting of pieces, right? There was really no telling on a week-to-week basis how guys were going to match up, what kind of schemes Anarumo and the Bengals are going to run, and I think that Kyler Gordon fits into that, even if he's not a number one corner type. So those are probably the two guys I'd be most interested in if I were watching the Bengals and trying to see what they were going to do between the first and second round. Those are the guys that I would definitely have my eyes on.
Why not Booth as much as you are? Are you not in his camp?
I just don't see maybe the ceiling that some others do. I kind of see him as, you know, a guy who can fit in the space. He can basically play, just like I was mentioning with Gordon, he can basically play any kind of defense. And we know that because Brent Venables is, you know, as mad scientist as it gets in the college ranks, right? He'll run anything. And I think that Booth does it well. The one thing that I think where people kind of talk about Booth that I maybe don't see is that potential to be a press man-to-man style of corner that can really help you lock in on wide receivers. And you can maybe do that as a number two on top, from a time to time basis, and certainly as a number three corner, right? Like some of the ways, and this is me rambling now, some of the ways that I think about receivers and corners is the way that kind of like basketball teams are built, right? Where you like, where you have a guy who can maybe score, but you don't want him to be your lead scorer, right? If he's your second or your third option, then you're probably going to be pretty good on offense. That's the way that I kind of look at Booth. So, you know, I while he is kind of being mocked in that late first round area, I would not rank him ahead or even with Kaiir Elam, who I think it will be rightfully placed there. And I think that, you know, maybe you can say it's a coin flip between he and Gordon. And I just happen to prefer what I've seen from Gordon instead of what I've seen from Andrew Booth. Not that that makes him like, a bad player, though.
No, no. And if the no matter who it was, if the Bengals came away with somebody to put next to Chidobe Awuzie and call him number two, yeah, they'd be thrilled,
yes,
to do that. And that, no, I guess no disrespect to Eli Apple, although all of NFL draft Twitter would like to give disrespect to Eli Apple. Yeah, or just the NFL Twitter in general.
That 90-minute period after the Super Bowl was there was a
rough one.
Yeah, there was a lot of catharsis going on.
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting, but they found a home for Eli. It's like, right, you know, he's a really interesting dude because, right, I mean, you had a background with Ohio State. I mean, he obviously came out and had all the stuff. I mean, mm-hmm, he was a top pick for a reason, and he bounced around, and he's an abrasive personality.
Right.
And then he seemed to, with like the disrespect that defense thrived on last,
right,
year, he just fit him, you know?
Leaned
he just kind of
it.
Fit him.
Yeah.
They kind of went all the way
it.
In.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, in the Super Bowl, it backfired a little bit, but whatever, you made it there, you know?
That's the gamble, right? That's the gamble. You put your chips in, sometimes it bites you, sometimes you get to cash out, and he happened to end up on the wrong end of it.
Yeah. But, you know, he also was playing in the Super Bowl, starting in the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
And a lot of people certainly did not see that twist coming
at all
in his career.
Certainly not.
After New Orleans.
Certainly not.
I want to ask you about safeties.
Mm-hmm.
Bengals are in that market, too. We don't know the long-term future of Jesse Bates in Cincinnati, Von Bell in his last year. They have no safeties under contract beyond next year. So I think they're probably, if you're saying maybe if they're looking for a Bates replacement, that in 2023, if he moves on, a center fielder who's got the skills to develop and maybe by next year he's a star. I'm curious who are some of those guys, the specific center fielders, and in the same respect, talking about this position, I find the position interesting because there's a lot of guys this year that are like, well, they play this position in college that we don't know what they're going to be.
Right.
We're talking about Dax Hill. You know, he's got these multiple positions, or there's Petrie, well, he's a slot corner, but could he be a safety?
And right,
there's these guys, a lot seems to be more of that. How do you view those guys translating, and who are some of the like future center fielders that you see in this draft?
So if I had to pick one again in that same kind of 31-ish range for them, that would be the best version that they could possibly walk away with is Lewis Cine. That's my opinion. Yeah. You know, he's a do everything type, you know, and this is me being a coach currently and spending so much time in football. I catch myself kind of giving some of those canned coaching answers. But I do think that this carries over and it matters in conversations about Cine, that basically from the time he was a true freshman, anytime there was a difficult task involved in Georgia's game plan, Kirby Smart trusted him to get it done. So whether it's being a spy on Joe Burrow or playing man-to-man coverage on Clyde Edwards-Helaire when they're making their run in 2019 LSU and playing them in the SEC championship game, to what he was doing this year, right, in a national title game, leading the team in tackles, being the defensive player of the game, and you see him do everything in between from playing in the middle of the field, dropping to a deep half, rolling into the box and helping out in run support, matching up with tight ends and backs and man coverage. That do-it-all type that we can obviously see that he likes, you know, when you talk about the ways that he's used Jesse Bates, you know, you talk about the way that this defense is designed in general. I think that a guy like Cine can add to that. And then you talk about those tweener types, like you were saying, Dax Hill is somebody who can move around a bit. It seems like he's drawing a lot of attention at safety a little bit more than as a cornerback type. And I think that that would fit as well. You talk about that versatility, and he's obviously got top tier speed and athleticism. And that would add a lot to that defense as well. And then I'm thinking if you don't walk away from the first round with one of those safeties and you're trying to grab a guy who also checks all the boxes, my pick from that would be what is his name? Kirby Joseph, pardon me. Kirby Joseph's from Illinois, who is a guy who has grown and developed every year in his career. It was a little bit rough as a freshman or his first year starting, kind of started to even out in the COVID season. And I think in year three, when he's got a little bit of continuity in the staff and has a different role, you see that kind of take off breakout year for him as a safety. And he's got great size, 6'3", long arms, has a lot of range, can play at the highest point, and is a willing tackler. That's another guy that you can maybe get in later rounds that you might not expect to turn out to be a high level starter, but certainly checks all the boxes and projects out to be able to get those jobs done.
Love it. You got a great piece up on modern linebackers and what that looks like and where they come from. You know, the Bengals feel like they found one in Logan Wilson a couple years ago who really kind of does it all. And they would say also does not commit holding or pass interference penalties, the goal line in the Super Bowl. in a game where people have been talking about Logan Wilson for years, if it wasn't for that, them losing on that penalty.
Right.
But where does the game go? I'm curious, as an open-ended discussion, where do you see the game going at that position? And how is it changing the most?
I will say that, and it's not specific to them. I just happen to notice it because I'm using it as a point, using where we're at today as a point of comparison to what it was when I was growing up, right? And when I was growing up, you get that Mike linebacker. He's probably, outside of edge rushers, he's going to be the highest paid player on your defense, right? Because he does so much in terms of fitting the run. Everybody's playing with heavier personnel, so you need this guy to be on the field all three downs, et cetera, et cetera. That's just not really the world that we live in anymore. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't still high paid linebackers. As I detailed in that piece, you still have your Darius Leonard, you still have, Zach Cunningham, you still have, Fred Warner. Logan Wilson is another guy who I think, when he gets to his next contract, is going to be knocking on the door asking to be paid in kind with the market setters, the CJ Mosleys, et cetera, et cetera. So those players are still there. We're just seeing that baseline in the way that teams value linebackers kind of drop as we're seeing safeties and the values of those players kind of go up. So I think that we're just seeing this kind of leveling out between interior defensive linemen, linebackers, and safety. So up the spine of a defense, right? These aren't the players who get paid the $19, $20 million all the time, but they are spots where if you can fill up that defense with $6 to $8 million, maybe $8 to $10 million players, you end up pretty strong, right? You have a lot of versatility. You can do a lot of different things. And funnily enough, talking to you about the Bengals, that seems to be their approach in their roster building, right? They're not necessarily looking for a star, a star level three technique. You're not necessarily looking for a star level middle linebacker, even though you might have one with you, right? In Logan Wilson, you're not necessarily looking for a star level safety. You just happen to get a guy who can play at that level in Jesse Bates. And that's the gamble that you make, right? Is that you're not paying premium prices at that position, but if you fill it up with enough of the right guys and one of them breaks out, now you've really got something to work with. So that's just kind of where I'm at with the linebacker position in conjunction with the rest of them. And I think that because of that, when you start talking about some of the guys that are available in this draft, whether it's a Chad Muma, a Christian Harris, a Troy Anderson, some of these guys who are maybe day two to day three level picks that won't be the Devin Lloyd, N'Kobe Dean, high level, high profile types of backers. There's plenty of guys you can get that won't only be starters, but will probably be plus starters in the NFL. Guys like Quay Walker and Channing Tindall as well fit the bill.
It's funny because Bengals have been getting ripped here by myself and others for taking third round linebackers every year and watching them bust every single year. And then all of a sudden they came back to back with Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson. And it's sort of like the league kind of moving back in that direction. And it's like, that's just sort of the way things are going. It's really interesting. I appreciate your time, Deontay, and welcome aboard. It's good to have you here. And we'll definitely have to revisit some stuff after the draft and check back in as the year goes along and see where everything goes next. But it's good to have you on board, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you for giving me the time, man. I appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
All right, great to chat with Deontay Lee and welcome him into the program. Make sure you're checking him out. Follow him on Twitter. Subscribe to him on the Athletic app and all of that good stuff. So great to have him join us. Let's focus more on the offensive side of the ball here for a second. We touched on some of the offensive line there for a little bit. Another position that you're kind of targeting here is tight end. And you know, the more you go through, by the way, not a single tight end sign pass this year. Like, again, we kind of find another one of these positions that has short-term and long-term openings. I mean, you've got to do something there for the long term. I mean, I think they're clearly excited about Hayden Hurst. They love the idea of what he can be. And, you know, Brian Callahan said with us on Tuesday, he's really intrigued by what's going to happen with the tight ends in this draft because of how aggressively we saw teams go after that position in free agency, how the cost bubbled up, how people were using the franchise tags, how CJ Uzama got real expensive, and all these tight ends made a bunch of money. It was really a surprising uptick at that position in free agency. How does that correlate to the draft? Is that because teams viewed this draft as not being great at tight end, that they wouldn't have answers there, so they're worthy to pay more? Or is it the pendulum swinging back to valuing that position more, and we'll see an uptick in tight ends in the draft as well? Or will they go where you feel like they would normally be slotted to be? I thought it was an astute observation and a fascinating one to track as we talk about when can the Bengals get one of these mid-round tight ends.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because CJ was a fifth-round pick and on second contract. Huge, huge deal. You're not talking about the Kelseys and the elites of the tight ends that are hitting these big deals. It's everybody's position-wide. And is that because teams value the experience more so than the crapshoot? There's not a lot of teams that are tight end-dependent, and yet all these teams are throwing money. Dane has one tight end with a first or second round grade, and that's Trey McBride. This from third to fifth round is where the bulk of them are. Before the Hayden Hurst signing, yeah, you would think that they would absolutely be in the market for second and even third round to get a tight end. I tend to think it'll be fourth or fifth now. There's the more pressing needs on defense. I still think wide receiver is a bigger deal than getting a backup tight end. Now that you have Hurst, they're gonna have a lot to choose from in that fourth and fifth round range, and it runs the gamut again. You've got the small school guys like Isaiah Likely from Coastal Carolina, which isn't quite as small as Sam Houston State and those other ones, but that they are all over the place, and they struck gold. I don't know. You want to say struck gold, but they made CJ Uzama into a very valuable commodity out of a fifth round pick, and there's something to be said for history repeating itself there.
There is, and one of my favorite things to do is kind of take a deeper analysis of where these guys are coming from. It's one of the core pieces of the NFL trend section of this strategy series. And it teaches you a lot about how you should view these things. And tight end has always been one of those where they come from off the beaten path. It's not your typical guys, but this struck me. I just was really taken by this. I went through and looked at the last 5 years of tight ends that have, graded at 75 or better for at least two of those seasons for PFF. So top of the top, guys playing consistently, the best tight ends in the draft. There was 10 of them. You probably can guess the names. Mark Andrews, Dallas Goedert, George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Gronk, Darren Waller, Tyler Higbee, Jared Cook, Gerald Everett, and Zach Ertz. You know, kind of the cream of the crop as you know it. Where did they come from? Jay, how many of those 10 do you think were the first tight end selected in their draft class?
One. Was it Mark Andrews?
No. Zero.
Zero.
Zero were the first tight end selected in their draft class. In fact, only two of them were the second tight end selected in their draft class. Zach Ertz was. Gronkowski was. The Jermaine Gresham draft, by the way. Yeah. R.I.P. Not R.I.P. to Jermaine Gresham. He's very much alive and doing well. R.I.P. to that pick not going as well as you would have liked to it. I apologize. Gresh is doing great. Had a fantastic career. Very healthy man. But in that, it's really fascinating because the average round of those tight ends is 3.2.
Shoot.
The average overall selection of those is 87.2. The average number tight end selected that year, 5.2. I mean, this is where it's happening. I mean, the idea of gotta go get Trey McBride, right? Which is what we talked about after everybody turned their mock drafts into us. No, in fact, don't. I mean, assuming he ends up being the first one off the board, you know, third, fourth, fifth on average, tight end selected is where you're seeing these stars eventually come from. Why? We've been going back to relative athletic score a lot, and because sometimes it shows itself. Seven of the nine, because Higbee was a non-tester. So seven of the nine had a relative athletic score over nine. How about that? So
impressive.
Mid-round guys with high relative athletic scores has been a very much a center of success. You know, when you're talking about how is this happening, where are they all coming from? Point directly to that stuff, okay? So, Jay, the next question is what? Who are those guys this year, right? Mm-hmm. Who are those guys who are supposed to go in the middle rounds and have the high relative athletic scores over nine? Well, you know I'm going to answer that question for you. Or you can read it as well in The Athletic. But you know what? We love our podcast listeners. So I'll give it to you here. Jelani Woods, who you heard Eric Edholm talk about a couple weeks ago, we know had the perfect 10, number only time ever for a tight end. Charlie Kohler, who you also have heard us discuss on this podcast. And Daniel Bellinger from San Diego State. Bellinger 9.66, Kohler 9.1, Jelani Woods with the 10. So if we're talking about sleepers to track, players to track, there is some of your profiles that fit where we've seen a lot of the best guys come from.
I wonder if Jelani Woods would be the tallest Bengals draft pick.
Marcus Hunt was 6'8".
Okay, yeah. And Woods is 6'7", so yes, that would not make sense.
But he's a freak. I mean, and that,
right.
The thing that's interesting about Woods, though, like when you watch it, like, you don't see that. Like you don't look, it doesn't look like you're watching a freak. I think it's just the general size, length, explosiveness is there, but it doesn't feel like he's always playing that way. And that's part of it. Like maybe you eventually get that out of him. And I thought once you watched the year go by as the season went on, you saw him getting more confidence, having more aggression in the way he ran with the ball and seeing more of that come out. So some team's going to be in love with the traits and take a stab at him. But I think that's what when we go back to circle back, what Brian was talking about. When, though, is that going to bubble up? People going in early on that traits, or is that something where a guy who doesn't necessarily have all the tape is still going to be around in round four, or who are we talking about?
And I'm going back to my Mark Andrews guess, and it was such a bad guess because he wasn't even the first tight end drafted on his own team.
Sure wasn't.
that was Hayden Hurst, who is now a Bengal.
Correct. And by the way, would anybody be more pissed if the Bengals took a tight end super early? Like he's just like, all he had to say to us in his press conference was like, I don't know, everywhere I go, this crap keeps happening to me. I got my opportunity and then Andrews becomes a star. I go to Atlanta, play one great year and they draft Kyle Dam Pitts. It's like, you know, I just want to have my opportunity. And what if they were like, Trey McBride? Need to read Hurst, get Hurst for comment. Receiver. We've kind of pinpointed the type a little bit that we think that they're looking for. I think we know that you want return juice here. We know that that's part of it. You can get that other places. I mean, ideally, you're finding somebody that has all that. You know, to me, the question is it just finding a receiver who's a great receiver? Or how much role will that special teams role play? I think pretty significant. I do think that when we talk about, you know, guys that are noted, Calvin Austin, some of these other guys with the return juice, I do think that's going to come into play as what they feel like is a nice fit for them there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-for-one pick. You need both. You need a receiver and a depth receiver, and you need a returner. I mean, Trent Taylor did a decent job at the end of last year, but he's not explosive. He's solid. He's kind of in the Alex Erickson mold, and I think they need someone who can be a game changer and who can hold on to the football, which is why Darius Phillips is one of the reasons Darius Phillips is nowhere to be found these days. I wonder if it has to be that. I don't think it has to, but there's going to be options where I think you could find a guy who's more in that kind of return specialist mold as an undrafted free agent. And that's such a gamble. If you got a guy you really like and you think you can lock him down when the draft is over, and things can go sideways there quickly. But I do think there'll be options out there. I don't think they have to get a receiver that has the return juice, but I do think that is going to be a priority, but it's not all or nothing. If there's a receiver they really like that doesn't have a history of returning, they're not going to shy away from them. And there's going to be, it's like tight end, that middle part of the draft is just stacked with receivers and stacked with tight ends. There's going to be all shapes, sizes, whatever you're looking for, you're going to be able to find there in rounds four, late third, fourth, fifth, even sixth.
Yeah. Between anybody with a third to fifth round grade, Dane has 17 receivers with a potential third to fifth round grade on the list. I mean, it's a lot of guys. And you're right, they're all different, where you can find one that fits exactly what you're looking for. And in that mix, Khalil Shakir, Boise State, Bo Melton from Rutgers, mentioned Calvin Austin from Memphis, all guys that have returnability, have speed, and have some versatility to bring you different things. You know, you wonder about size. How willing will they be to take on smaller receivers? You know, the physicality is important. And is how much will that matter, or how much will you look at Calvin Austin at 5'8", 170 and say, too small, right? Mm-hmm. To be that. Maybe you do. I think that's the curious part with this team is if they're looking for that, how much will they feel like they're sacrificing size or something else that they really need? At some point, if you're waiting to the third to fifth round to take a receiver, you're sacrificing size. But, you know, we certainly know 10 years ago, Mosinu in the third, Marvin Jones in the fifth. If you're looking for templates of the type of player they're looking for and how they're trying to strike it again, you only need to look back to exactly 10 years ago in a draft that they really filled out their receiving core in the mid to late rounds.
Yeah, another thing to keep an eye on, do they go get a taller contested catch type of guy? Do they kind of have that contingency? Are they going to be able to sign Burrow, Higgins, Jamar Chase when he comes up, Logan Wilson, all these contracts that are coming due? Do they maybe get someone in the Higgins template that could be a succession plan there if they can't keep him? And an interesting guy there is also from Clemson, Justin Ross, almost 6'4", 205. You're right. There's a whole lot of under 6 foot guys in that third to fifth range. But it'll be interesting to see if they go the other route and get a bigger guy that, you know, maybe we've seen them do this before. And this isn't comparable yet to the early part of last decade when they were going to five straight playoff appearances. But you put together a solid roster with holes, and that's the way you start drafting is succession plans in the back of your mind. So there's a whole lot of directions they can go. They're taking one, maybe two in these middle rounds. And it's going to be really interesting to see what they prioritize. If it's size, if it's speed, if it's returnability, whatever they want, it's there.
Yeah, and that's great. I you know, I look at it and think one receiver in between the third and the fifth round is where this thing ends. And there's just, you're right, there's so many different directions that you can go, and you'll feel great at that point. You'll feel like I don't think you need to go succession plan yet. Like, you still have two more seasons of T. Higgins on the rookie contract. He could complain about it. He could not show up for voluntary workouts next summer, like we are seeing Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown and Terry McLaurin doing. But inevitably, he's under contract to play for you for two more seasons. And the way receivers come out, there's so many good ones every year. You're never, I don't think you'll ever feel pigeonholed there, that you won't be able to get a receiver in a draft. You just go right in. If you're picking 32, you go in there and you pick just like you picked T. Higgins a couple years ago. You find the next T. Higgins. I think that's where they'll have to go to make that happen. But yes, finding a good receiver. I don't think you need to find another T. Higgins to person. I think you're just looking for a good receiver, and no matter what they look like, and you're going to have a prioritization, if possible, to find one that could be a quality returner for you, or bring you some element you don't have, the gadget player, right, that they like have haphazardly tried to make Puka Williams into or whatever. Like, that's where you bring in the small guy. Like, well, we could create a role for this guy. Mm-hmm. You can make something happen for that guy. If we're talking about, you know, Austin, Shakir, these types of guys. So very curious to see where that goes. But I think, to me, that's where that position stands. And outside of that, you know, we talked about offensive line earlier. Obviously, that's going to be a focus. I expect to see something come off the board for them at some point. It's just a matter of when. You can make an argument for anywhere in the draft. I can make an argument for a guard at one. I can make an argument for not taking one until five or six. And we'll see how that plays out. You can make an argument for, you know, one of the centers in the mid round, you know, but I think either way, it going through this process has taught me something, Jay. And that is more than I thought. And I thought, you know, there's obviously a lot of value in trading back. It is so much better if they can just add a fourth. And everything about them accomplishing what they want to this weekend. I mean, you add another fourth, you can check off both of those boxes, whether it be a double up, whether it be the second, the safety and the corner, whether it be the tight end in the fourth before things start to fall off, or the receiver that you really like. I just think it really opens them up to really kind of get what they want to out of everything. It just seems obvious to me. Now, I don't know whether that will happen. It doesn't. These things have to fall together, and that tends to happen at the last minute a little bit in the 48 hours before the draft happens. But obviously, as we discussed last week and you wrote about, that's why we've spent so much time on it, it's something that feels like it could kind of complete what they have for their boxes they're trying to check off.
Yeah, because people criticize the trade back last year and ending up with Jackson Carman in the year he ended up having. But don't forget that Evan McPherson probably doesn't happen if they don't make that trade back. There's two parts to that. And what you touched on too, at 31, they've got so many different directions they can go, and there's not a lot of difference, even if you're just looking at a certain position, there's not a lot of difference between prospect A, B, and C that are available. So if you've got multiple positions and multiple guys within each position, you can go back 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 spots and still feel good about getting a guy that you want and pick up that fourth round pick. And yes, that's what there's so many positions that are really kind of bloated in the middle there with talent that would really, really open up their board to add an extra pick. And, you know, who knows, maybe they get crazy. Maybe they trade back in the first and the second, because it's not that far off at the end of the second round, where you're still dealing with guys with just the thinnest of margins of difference between how they stack up as a prospect, and that there's, you're still going to have a lot of different directions you can go with that second round pick. So I think we did, I can't remember off the top, but we did a run passer boot, or we did a percentages of what we thought that of them trading back. To me, it just feels more and more likely, not necessarily the first round. It could happen in the second round, but at some point next weekend, it feels like we're going to see that. And they've done it. For the last five drafts, they've traded back in the second round. So it's the templates there, all the reasons to do it again this year are there. It's starting to feel more and more likely that we're going to see it at some point over the weekend.
Before we get out of here, we got to get another run passer boot in, and Jay's got stats. We can't go a week without it. Jay, what do you got stats on for me this week?
So I was curious how many guys at the Bengals draft next weekend will start for them this year. And it's not going to be the plan, but there could always be injuries. So I went back and looked to see how many draft games started by draft picks the Bengals have had. And I started with recent history, and I ended up going all the way back to the start of the Mike Brown era in 1991. And it hasn't been a lot. You would think when things went south after the 2015 season that they would be starting a lot of rookies as the team was kind of cratering and plummeting toward that number one overall pick for Joe Burrow. And it has not been the case. They 28 last year, 33 the year before, 25 and 19, 27 and 18, and 22 games started by draft picks in 2017. And to put that into context, I also looked at where that ranks league wide. Only 2020 with 33 starts was even in the top half of the league. And you want to know why the 1990s were the way the 1990s were? In 1992, the Bengals ranked second in draft pick starts. 1993, first. 1994, third. 1996, tied for fifth. 1998, tied for first. That's not good. When you've got that many rookies starting games for you over and over and over again, That kind of defines that era. More recently, the highest ranking, they ranked eighth in the league in 2004. They had 33 games started by rookies. The 2016-2015 team, they were tied for 30th. They were almost last in the league. 2016, and part of this is because William Jackson got hurt, first round pick, didn't play a single game. But they only had six games started by rookies in 2016, and they only had eight games started by rookies in 2015. And that makes sense because 15 was, you know, arguably the best team, one of the best teams in team history, even though it didn't go very far with the meltdown at Paul Brown, we all remember. And then coming off of that in 2016, like I mentioned, they still had a solid roster. They had the William Jackson injury, only six starts. So I thought we would kind of piggyback those stats into a run passer boot. And that would be how many of this year's draft, how many games started by this year's draft picks? Will it be 17 or fewer? 18 to 26? Or 27 or more.
Okay. I'm going to run with 17 or fewer. I just, even if you go to the most positional need with your top picks, there's no saying that that person is going to get any starts. There's no saying that if they take Kyler Gordon or Andrew Booth or Kyer Elam at 31 overall, that player is going to start over Eli Apple necessarily. They might not. We don't. I mean, that's not a sure thing. It's not like a sure thing where you could say, well, the first round pick at a position of need is definitely going to come in and start for you. Not the case. Same with defensive interior, assuming health. You know, BJ Hill is going to be your starter, or even if they took an edge guy. I mean, a tackle, offensive tackle, or whatever. Maybe a guard. Maybe your best shot would be if they took up guard 31 overall, that would be that guy starting at left guard. That's your best shot of someone actually for sure starting games. The rest are probably going to be due to injury. So for that fact, I'm going to run with 17 or fewer and just go on down the line and pass on 18 to 26 and boot 27 or more.
Yeah, I ran with 18 to 26 just because that opportunity is going to be there for the first corner they take to beat out Eli Apple. I don't think it's crazy. It's not going to be given to them, but it certainly it's on the table. And then even if Eli Apple beats out that guy, what are the chances that your top three corners play every game of the year? You're bound to see an injury somewhere. And then that first round pick or that first corner pick, let's say, is going to jump in there and at least get a handful of starts. And then, like you said, you know, some BJ Hill possibly goes down and you've got a defensive tackle that slides in as a starter, or a rookie draft pick offensive lineman comes in and beats out Jackson Carman and gets a decent number of starts. So I think it'll be higher. And just looking at recent history, I mean, going back to 2017, the fewest that they've had is 22. So I'm going to stick in that window and I'm going to run with 18 to 26. I'll pass on 17 or fewer and I will boot 27 or more. If they get 27 or more starts from rookie draft picks this year, this season went south in possibly a couple different ways.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So that's a long run passer boot for us to track, Jay. That's going to work. Make sure you put that one on the spreadsheet.
Put
a star next to it because I'm certainly not going to remember that we even did it by the time we get to next January or February or whatever.
Now that you say that throws in another variable. Maybe they're in the same position in week 18 again where they're resting all their regulars and they throw a bunch of rookies in there to start. And you,
they're going to screw me. I know it. All right. So good stuff here. Next week, we're going to be going mock draft style as we get prepared for draft weekend. And of course, you know, we love draft weekend. So we'll have all your coverage during draft weekend every night, recapping everything that goes on and waiting on you in the morning. So looking forward to all that stuff. It's going to be fun. As always, I know everybody is ready for it to happen and be done with. and so we can start to analyze who they have added and start talking about the next stop, which will be training camp and the season starting. Hard to believe we're already back at that part of the offseason. It feels like we haven't even started the offseason yet, but here we go. So anyway, thanks everybody. Really looking forward to chatting next week. And then, of course, a reminder again, Tuesday night, May 3rd, the Tuesday after the draft, 7 o'clock at 50 West Brewing Company. We will be there along with Bengals Director of College Scouting, Mike Potts, breaking down everything about the Bengals draft. Come on down, listen to some Bengals draft talk, ask some questions to us, have a drink, enjoy what will definitely be a beautiful night. I'm calling it now. No snow, and it'll be fantastic. We'll look forward to seeing all of you there. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.